8. The sun was up. Amazing. How many hours had he shivered down there for Pete's sake? In any case, the sun was a welcome warmth on his face when he walked out of the house, following Harry, the other two behind him, and the sun-warmed flagstones were heaven on his feet. This was the central courtyard again, the pocket jungle. They'd brought him upstairs and through a confusing series of rooms and out a set of French doors, and here was the court. Harry set off toward the middle of it on the curving flagstone path. What were they going to do, murder him and bury the body in the middle of the court? Nonsense. They wanted him around to show to the law, to be accused of murder, to take the rap for B.G. and his boys. Nevertheless, Grofield hesitated just a second before following Harry. A gun was immediately poked into his back, and a voice said, "Move along, chum." He moved along. Once again there was that brief instant when the jungle growth was all that could be seen in any direction, when the house ceased to exist, and the mind began to jitter with the irrational shakes. But one step more, and there was the clearing, slate-floored, with its table and chairs. And B.G. D'Annamato. It couldn't be anybody else. A big, heavy-set man, dressed in a lightweight business suit, and sprawled broadly on one of the flimsy ice-cream chairs. He was puffing away on a cigar as though to illustrate his contempt of clichés. As Grofield approached, D'Annamato took the cigar from his mouth and studied him like a slave auctioneer appraising the day's goods. Grofield came to a stop on the other side of the table. "Lee J. Cobb, I presume," he said.
"D'Annamato," corrected D'Annamato.
"B.G. D'Annamato."
"Grofield," Grofield said.
"A.J. Grofield."
D'Annamato pointed his cigar. "Sit down."